Welcome to our podcast, Healthy Brain Banter. This is a podcast created by a team of nursing students to bring you accurate and reliable information about mental health. In this episode, we will discuss postpartum mental health. According to the Mayo Clinic, postpartum depression can be categorized as mild postpartum baby blues, moderate postpartum depression, and severe postpartum psychosis. Baby blue symptoms can include mood swings, anxiety, irritability, feeling overwhelmed, reduced concentration, appetite problems, crying, and trouble sleeping. The symptoms of postpartum depression are more intense and last longer than baby blues. Symptoms of postpartum depression include depressed mood or severe mood swings, excessive crying, difficult bonding with your baby, withdrawing from family and friends, loss of appetite, inability to sleep or sleeping too much, hopelessness, worthlessness, severe anxiety and panic attacks, thoughts of harming yourself or baby, recurrent thoughts of death or suicide. Finally, postpartum psychosis is a rare condition that can develop following the birth of the baby. The symptoms are severe and include confusion, obsessive thoughts about your baby, hallucinations and delusions, sleep disturbances, excessive energy and agitation, paranoia, and attempts to harm yourself or your baby. It is important to see your doctor if these feelings do not fade after 2 weeks, are getting worse, make it hard for you to care for your baby, make it hard for you to complete everyday tasks, or you have thoughts of harming yourself or your baby. According to the CDC, 1 in 8 women experience postpartum depression. As mentioned above, the symptoms of postpartum depression and psychosis can be quite serious. If you're experiencing these symptoms, reach out to your healthcare provider. If you are experiencing suicidal thoughts, please call 988 for immediate help. Today, I will be interviewing Whitney Bassett about her experience with postpartum depression. Whitney Bassett graduated from BYU nursing program in 2017. She has worked in pediatrics, home health, and currently works at Hoops Vision in the OR. She met her husband on a study abroad at BYU Jerusalem, and together they have 3 boys. In 2020, Whitney experienced severe postpartum depression after delivering her second baby. She's here today to share her experience with us. Whitney, we're so excited to have you on our podcast today, and we can't wait to learn more from you.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So we want to start out with our first question that we ask all of our guests. What do you do in your life to create a healthy mind?
I'm going to get a little spiritual here for just 1 second.
Please do, yeah.
In the last general conference, and when you sent me the questions for this, this is the first thing that came to my mind. There was a talk, it's titled, Jesus is the Answer. And it's kind of interesting because when I was in the throes of depression, I couldn't really feel God. It was hard for me to feel the Spirit. But since I've been able to come out of it and, I mean, find a more healthy space, Jesus really has been the answer. And just remembering that it's okay to not be okay, and Jesus knows how you feel, and that he will make you whole, whether it's today, tomorrow, or in the next life. It will happen someday, so there's always hope. So that's the first thing I'll say. Other than that, though, for me, exercise is huge.
Yeah.
If I can exercise every day, I'm not always consistent, but I notice it makes a huge difference for me. Also, getting enough sleep.
Yeah.
Fueling my body with healthy food. I mean, I am not perfect at any of these, but when I am doing all three of them, when I'm meeting with God once a day, whether that's through prayer, scripture study, just being outside helps. So getting my face in the sun, being in nature, helps me feel connected. So those things are what helps me keep a healthy mind.
That's perfect. Thank you for sharing. I think nature really can do a lot for our mental health, fresh air and the sun on our face. And sometimes it's hard to just realize, like, we can go on a 5-minute walk outside and it can instantly make us feel better. So
yes.
I love that tip. So what symptoms did you start to notice in yourself that made you think that you were experiencing postpartum depression?
So after I had my second, I remember leaving the hospital and I told my husband, I feel amazing. I haven't even cried. And when I deliver my babies, for some reason, I don't cry. I'm just so excited. And yeah. A lot of people get happy tears, but nothing comes for me. So I remember telling him, Taylor, I feel amazing. I haven't cried. I feel energized. Let's do this. But about a week after I got home, it changed. I remember on Christmas Day, I woke up, he was born the 15th. And on Christmas Day, I woke up and I just felt, I describe it like the color block. I didn't want to interact with my family. I didn't want to watch my kids open their presents. I just wanted to stay in bed and sleep. So right then I was like, okay, my hormones are kind of off. I just had a baby. This is normal baby blues.
Right.
A lot of women experience baby blues.
Yeah.
And it had only been a week. So I'm thinking to myself, this will go away. And it didn't. It got worse. But it was hard for those first couple of weeks because I knew in nursing school all the signs and symptoms.
Right.
But when you're experiencing it yourself, you're kind of in denial a little bit. You're like, yeah. Oh, this is fine. I'm fine. This is normal. But the people around you also begin to notice.
Right. So can you tell us a little bit more about this progression and what people started to notice and what it progressed into?
Yeah. So gradually, I stopped eating. I just didn't have an appetite. I wasn't sleeping well at all. I was a complete insomniac, but I was exhausted. I didn't have interest in my baby. I remember looking at him and thinking, I don't feel like you're mine. And it was different with my first. I was obsessed with him. Right. But with my second, I didn't feel connected in any way. But my husband brought it up and he said, Whitney, you should go see your doctor. Let's go get this checked out. And I said, no, I'm fine. And I tried my hardest to fake it, but you just can't fake it
right.
when you're that depressed. So yeah, I avoided all people. I didn't want to get out of bed. I couldn't eat. I just felt awful, crying all the time. And then finally, my husband just scheduled the appointment himself. And he said, I called the doctor. We're going this day, this time. I'm driving you. And so he did. He brought me and I sat down in front of my doctor and I was ashamed. I felt guilty that yeah. I had just had this beautiful, new, healthy boy. And I had friends at the time struggling with infertility and they wanted a baby so bad. And here I had this new baby and I was so sad.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and said, Whitney, if you had diabetes, you would need insulin to survive. And right now you have strong enough depression
yeah.
that you need medication to survive right now. And so he did. He prescribed me medication. I started taking it, didn't notice a difference. I mean, the hard thing with psych meds is they take a while to kick in and right. you don't know if it will work.
Yes.
Some people have to try lots of different kinds. And anyway, so I tried this one for a couple of weeks and I didn't notice any difference and I was getting worse. And so right. I went back in and he added on another on top. And a week later, I was suicidal and to the point where my family was like, we gotta take you somewhere.
Yeah.
So I was admitted to Salt Lake Behavioral Health and it was really hard.
Yeah.
I remember sitting there and they told me, this is your last time you'll be able to breastfeed your baby. So I had him there with me. I was sitting in the admitting room and they said, we are going to put you on some medications that won't work with breastfeeding. So I breastfed my little Beckham for the last time and it was so hard because I remember it was the only way I felt like I was giving him something.
Right.
Because I felt like I couldn't give him my love. I just didn't. And that's how I knew that there was still part of me that did care. Right. And that gave me some hope. But yeah. while I was in it, I was like, I am the worst mom ever. I felt so guilty.
Yes.
That the one thing I could do for him, I had to stop. And then I remember going upstairs in the scrubs they gave me. And it was hard. The worst 3 days of my life. I did not feel safe emotionally on the floor. They keep you safe physically. And I feel like, I don't know, maybe other places do a good job at making you feel safe emotionally and mentally, but the place I was at did not.
Right.
And it was scary. And I was with people who were not like me at all. I just remember my parents and my husband fighting to get me out, but they won't just let you out if you're suicidal. So
right.
I had to stay. And then after that, I went home and was still suicidal. But they were not going to put me somewhere else. They said, we'll just take care of her. So my in-laws are amazing. They kind of became my bodyguards. This is in COVID, so everything right. is shut down. No one's at work.
Right.
They kind of babysat me for 2 months, and my parents took my kids because I couldn't even be around them. I was
right.
really, really, it was bad. And my husband went back and forth.
Between you and the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is a crazy experience. And I'm sure when you're in nursing school, you learn about these diseases and disease processes and mental illnesses, and you're like, that will never be me.
Mm-hmm.
So what did it feel like for that to be you?
Yeah, I felt like I was in a dream. I mean, knowing myself, my family who knew me, we were all just kind of like, wow. It goes to show you that it really is a disease.
Right.
And it's not a weakness. It's not that you're not trying hard enough, that you're not good enough. It really is there's chemicals in your brain, hormones, a lot of things play into factor.
Yeah.
And it was hard for me because in nursing school, I remember going on psych wards for my clinical rotations, and my eyes were wide, my jaw hit the floor. It was eye-opening.
Yeah.
And I never thought I would end up there in a million years, but I did.
Yeah.
And it was hard, but looking back, I'm thankful for the experience because I'm more empathetic.
Yes.
And I feel like I can kind of understand others, and that really, it's a sickness, it's an illness, it's not something that you can control sometimes.
Right. So what was the most helpful to start relieving these symptoms that you were experiencing?
Yeah, and this is kind of a hard question because I feel like for 2 or 3 months, nothing, which is a sad answer, but
right.
for a while I was in survival mode, and it was really about surviving the next minute. And right. so in that time it was distraction. It was sleeping. It was doing anything I could to distract my brain. When I finally got out of that rut, it was therapy. I went to intensive outpatient therapy, and it ended up being 13 hours a week therapy. So I was in group therapy and individual therapy, and that saved me. It was amazing. It was a group specifically for postpartum depression, anxiety. So I felt like I could relate to the other moms in my group, and I felt safe. So that really helped. Medication, finding a good individual therapist and a good psychiatrist, and then just trying my hardest to do the things that I used to love to do.
Right.
Even though I didn't find joy in them in the moment, gradually over time it got easier, and it did start to make me happier when I kept trying. One thing I learned in therapy was opposite action. So usually when you're depressed, right, you just want to lay in bed. You don't want to eat. Sometimes you overeat.
Right.
You just don't want to wake up in the morning. And so every day I'd have to say, okay, I don't want to get out of bed, but the opposite action is getting out of bed. So I'd have to get out of bed and shower, brush my teeth, eat food. It sounds simple, but it's not when you're struggling that much.
Right.
But opposite action is one, I guess, technique I used a lot. So if I didn't want to see people, well, I need to call someone and I need to go see people and hang out with friends and loved ones.
Right. And over time that started to help you feel more normal again.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if any, residual effects do you have from postpartum depression?
It's kind of hard. I actually, when you asked me to be on the podcast, I kind of got nervous because I haven't talked about this in a long time, probably publicly since the last time I was here at BYU on the college handoff. It's hard to talk about. It is. I feel like for a long time, people kind of knew me as, oh, Whitney, the girl with postpartum depression, right. The girl who went to the psych ward. And that was hard because I'm like, no, I'm Whitney. Like, I love being outside. I love so many different things. There's so much more to me than this disease.
Right.
That being said, people have to talk about it because if no one talks about it, things won't change.
Right.
So yeah, I have been nervous to talk about it again, but yeah, I still do have kind of residual leftover kind of scaries in the closet. Like when I think about it, I mean, I start to get a little anxious, and when I start to even feel a little depressed now as a mom, I'm like, oh no, is it happening again? And I start to get a little anxious, PTSD.
Like, yes, for sure.
Oh no. But I think I've had more positive things come from this than negative because I've learned so much.
Yeah.
And now I'm able to notice, okay, I'm not feeling great today or I'm having a bad day. Well, that doesn't mean that I'm going to spiral. Every mom has bad days.
Right.
And every person on earth has bad days. And I have control. I can choose to, I mean, do the things that I know will help. And if they don't help, well, then that means I need to get help from a professional.
Right.
So that's been good. But yeah, for sure, I still, I mean, get nervous. I just had my third baby 7 months ago and I had to have a plan in place because I was nervous that I would get it again. And this time I didn't. It's been amazing. It's been a really healing experience. But yeah. I mean, I went on medication the day I had him, even though I wasn't depressed yet. I went on progesterone and I went to therapy and that plan helped me stay okay. And hopefully if I have another, I'll do the same thing.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I get anxious every once in a while thinking that it could happen again. But if it does, then I have so many resources and more knowledge to face it.
So going into having your third baby, were you nervous that you would have postpartum depression again? And how did you deal with that specifically?
Yeah, for sure. I was really nervous that people would look at me and be like, oh, Whitney, you're crazy. Why would you do that again? Yeah. Look what you just went through. But I knew that I had more kids up there in heaven. I'm like, they're just there and they're going to come sometime. So it might as well be now.
Right.
And I had prayed a lot, and I felt like it would be okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the outcome would be. I didn't know if it would be another disaster, but I knew that it would be okay in the end. And so my husband and I decided that we would just press forward. And when I first got pregnant, I was so, so nervous. But I made a plan, and we stuck to the plan. And there were bumps in the road when I stopped breastfeeding. I got really depressed there for a month. That was probably 2 months ago.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to let that throw me off too much. I just did what I knew I needed to do, and it turned out okay.
Right.
And I think a lot of people who go through this are afraid to have more kids. And I think that is 100% okay. That's okay to feel afraid.
Right.
It's okay to not want to. And it just depends on your specific situation, how you feel, how your spouse feels. I have friends who were in the group with me who decided they were done with having children. And I think that is great.
Yeah. Very valid to feel that way.
Completely valid.
Postpartum depression obviously doesn't only affect you, but it affects your spouse and your parents, your in-laws, your other child as well, and your child that you just had. So what can family and friends do to help someone who is experiencing postpartum depression?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, when I was really in it and not functioning, and when I wanted to be dead, they were great. They were a great support. I mean, my in-laws, they were with me 24/7. And I mean, not every person has that support system. So if you don't, then you might need to be hospitalized for a while. You might need intensive therapy. But when I was in that situation, I think what helped me was I had people who I trusted, and they could ask me, Whitney, are you suicidal? And they felt comfortable enough to ask that question.
Yeah.
And I think people feel nervous to ask that of their loved ones, of their friends, because they feel it might put an idea in their head, or it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But to a person who's struggling and who is suicidal, that question can be life-saving. So they ask me that question a lot. And sometimes I wasn't, and sometimes I was, and sometimes I had a plan. Mm-hmm. And the follow-up question to are you suicidal is, do you have a plan? And they asked me, and many times they were there to save me or just be there to hold me, hug me, listen. I think the best thing you can do is to listen.
Yeah.
To show up and say, look, I don't know what to say, because a lot of the times we don't. We don't have the answers. We don't have the perfect words. We can just say that. I want to be here for you, though. Even though I don't have the words to say, I want to sit here with you. I'll bring you a meal. I'll come over. I'll watch your kids so you can take a shower. I'll just be your friend. And I think to check in on people frequently, so that they know that you really do care.
Right.
It was hard for me when people would ask, Whitney, what can I do for you? And I really just didn't know, because I didn't know how to help myself. But if people would just offer suggestions or just say, I'm going to do this, is that okay with you? Or I'm going to clean your house. And sometimes they'd be like, oh, no, don't worry about that. And I would be able to say, I need this instead.
Right.
But listening is the biggest thing you can do. Listening, loving, checking in frequently. But it's really hard to watch your loved one go through something like that.
Right.
And taxing on other people. I mean, my husband, it took a toll on him. And he actually went to therapy so that he could learn how to help me. And I'm just so thankful for my family and friends who stood next to me.
Yes.
So
I like a few things you said, like being aware of your support system, and if you don't have one, finding one, or seeking out professional help if you don't have a support system that can support you in your state. And the other thing I really liked is saying how, like, providing suggestions, like, I want to come and clean your house, or I want to come and make you food, but also asking for consent in doing that. Is that okay with you? Because you don't want to be overwhelming to that person who is struggling mentally, but you also want to give them all the support that you can. So I think that was a really good suggestion.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you have any resources that you would recommend for someone experiencing a similar diagnosis?
Yes. So anyone who has postpartum depression, I send them straight to Serenity Recovery and Wellness. It is amazing. They have a lot of therapists there. They're all trained in this, very familiar with any postpartum related mental illness. And they really did save my life. I love them so much. But yeah, I send them straight there. And then I just recommend finding a good psychiatrist or a doctor that they trust. And if they can't do Serenity, to just find a therapist. But it's hard to find a therapist you connect with, but it's worth it when you do. So you have to keep trying. Don't give up, is what I say.
Those are great tips.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so do you have any final thoughts or stories that you'd like to share with us today?
I would just share that, in going a little bit back to spirituality and religion, when you struggle with mental health, mental illness, and especially depression, I feel like it dulls your ability to feel. You just kind of feel numb. And it was so hard for me to feel the spirit. And I was I guess, really struggling with the idea that God had abandoned me in the moment I needed him most. And I think that it took me a while to realize that he was there and he was reaching out to me through those around me, right, through my family, through my friends, through small experiences that I just chalked up to coincidence. Mm-hmm. But he was there throughout all of it, and that his son, Jesus Christ, suffered it all, yeah, literally descended below it all, felt every pain that I had felt, and it was unbearable at times. And so when I would think about, I guess, Jesus Christ and how he had felt that, not only for me, but everyone else, it was humbling.
Yeah.
And it was hard. I questioned. My testimony wavered for a long time because I thought, he's not there, but he is there. And just be patient. If you're struggling with depression and you feel abandoned or alone, be patient and try to see his hand in other places in your life. Because he is there. He knows you. You will get through it. I thought when I was in the middle of it that it would never end. And the pain was so great that I wanted to end it all. I thought my family would be better off without me, my kids, my husband. But it's just not true.
Yeah,
it's not true. You are needed here on this earth. You are here for a purpose. And even if you don't know what that purpose is, you are. You're here for a purpose, for a reason. People need you. Your family needs you. And it will get better. It will take time and a lot of patience, a lot of work, mm-hmm, but it does get better. And if you remember Jesus, the answer is him.
Yeah.
You'll get through it. You will. I promise.
Yeah.
So I think that's the main thing is, the main thing is to remember the main thing.
Right.
The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. That's what my friend always says.
That's awesome. Thank you for that final thought. I think it's really important to remember that this too shall pass, that nothing, yes, is permanent, mm-hmm, and that God is with us throughout it all. I think it's really important to understand that with depression, all of your feelings can be dulled. And as you said, a lot of times we feel the spirit through feelings or through emotions, but when that's dulled, it feels like God is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important, like you said, to remember to look for him in other places or in other ways that he's manifesting himself to us. So yes, I really like that. And I also really like how you mentioned earlier to not be afraid to ask people if they're suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times we're afraid to ask that question and afraid to ask if they have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stigma around it too, that if we ask that, it puts the thought in their head and then they will.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important to remember it's a safe question to ask, and it keeps them safe to ask that.
Yes.
So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Okay, Whitney. Well, we'd just like to thank you again for being here and being so vulnerable and sharing such a vulnerable experience that's so close to you. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Happy to do it.
And we're so grateful to have learned so much from Whitney about her experience with postpartum depression and also her willingness to share her story. I want to recognize, like I normally do, that this is Whitney's experience and story, and that everyone's experience is going to be different with postpartum depression. And again, if you're experiencing any of these symptoms discussed today, please reach out to your healthcare provider. And if you are experiencing thoughts of suicide, please call 988. This is an emergency crisis suicide line that you can call for immediate help. And finally, I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in this week.